The ride climbs fast. Lights below shrink into a grid of noise and music. Operators watch from the ground. A teenager sits high above Orlando, legs dangling, trusting a system built to hold him. The drop comes without warning. Wind snaps. Gravity takes over. In seconds, the promise of safety fails. People scream. Phones fall. Someone yells to stop the ride, but it is already done. A body hits the ground beside steel and concrete meant for thrill, not death. Sirens cut through the park. Security pushes the crowd back. Workers stand frozen, eyes locked on the tower. A mother's voice is not there yet, but it is coming. This is not a freak accident. It is not bad luck. Somewhere between design, oversight, and profit, a line was crossed. A ride kept running when it should not have. Limits ignored, safeguards altered, warnings missed or buried. By the time the park goes quiet, one question hangs in the air. Who let this happen and who will pay for it? Chapter 1. The park is already loud when Tyre Sampson walks toward the tower. Icon Park glows against the Orlando night. Music drifts between restaurants, ride lights pulse in slow patterns, selling height and speed. The Orlando Freefall stands above everything else, a narrow column of steel with seats bolted around the edge. It promises a clean thrill, straight up, straight down. Tyre is 14 years old. He is visiting from Missouri. He is tall for his age, broad-shouldered, an athlete who moves with confidence. Friends trail behind him. They are joking. Phones are out. This is vacation. This is supposed to be fun. The ride cycles again as they wait. Seats rise. Riders scream on the way down. Applause follows. The operator resets the system. The lights return to idle. Nothing looks broken. Nothing looks rushed. When Tyre steps onto the platform, the mood is casual. Operators guide riders into seats. Each person is assigned a position. Tyre sits near the outer edge. His legs hang free. A shoulder harness comes down over his chest. A manual check follows, fast and practiced. The restraint does not lock the way it should. There is no audible alarm, no visible stop. The ride operator does not remove Tyre from the seat. No second check happens. The cycle continues. From the ground, the tower begins to lift. The platform rises slowly at first, then steadier. Riders look down, some wave, others grip the handles. Tyre sits upright, hands near the restraint. He trusts the system. Everyone does. The ascent takes less than a minute. The city spreads out below. Cars look like dots. Music fades. Wind grows stronger. At the top, the platform pauses. This is the moment designed to build fear. What riders do not know is that safety depends on tight tolerances. The ride is engineered to operate within strict limits. Restraints are calibrated to lock at precise positions. Sensors are meant to confirm engagement. When those systems fail, the margin for error disappears. The drop sequence begins. The platform tilts slightly, riders brace, then gravity takes control. As the seats release, the force is immediate. Bodies pull against restraints, wind slams upward. In that instant, Tyre is no longer secured. He slips forward. There is no struggle visible from below, no time to react. One moment he is there, the next he is gone. Tyre falls more than 400 feet. The impact is violent and final. His body hits the concrete near the base of the tower, just outside the ride's footprint. The sound cuts through the park noise, screams replace laughter. People freeze, some run, others stare. Phones drop, someone shouts for help. Another person yells at the operator to stop the ride, but the platform has already reached the bottom. Operators rush toward the landing area. Security tries to push people back. A small crowd forms despite the barriers. No one understands what they are seeing. Emergency services are called. The response is fast, but there is nothing to save. Paramedics arrive. Police secure the scene. The ride goes dark. For Tyre's friends, time stretches and breaks. They are moved away. Questions are asked. Names are taken. Shock settles in. Within minutes, the park is no longer a place of entertainment. It is a crime scene. The ride stands still against the sky, silent now, its lights off. A machine built for thrills has become evidence. As authorities begin their work, a basic question emerges. How could this happen on a modern ride? One advertised as the tallest of its kind, one that passed inspections, one designed with redundant safety systems. The initial answers are vague. Officials say the investigation is ongoing. The park releases a brief statement expressing condolences. The ride remains closed. Behind the scenes, details begin to surface. The Orlando Freefall is not a simple machine. It relies on mechanical restraints, electronic sensors, and human operation working together. Any failure alone should trigger a stop. multiple failures point to something deeper. Investigators focus first on the seat. The restraint position is examined, measurements are taken, engineers review specifications, they compare what should have happened to what did. One fact becomes clear early. Tire did not fit the ride within approved limits. There are weight and size restrictions set by the manufacturer. Those limits are not suggestions. They exist because the restraint system can only secure riders within a defined range. Exceeding that range changes how forces act during the drop. Tire exceeded those limits. That fact alone raises a serious issue. If a rider does not meet requirements, the ride should not operate. Operators are trained to remove the rider. The system should prevent dispatch if restraints are not properly engaged. Yet the ride went up. Attention turns to the restraint sensors. These components are designed to confirm that each harness is locked in a safe position. If a sensor fails or is bypassed, the system may register a false safe condition. Investigators begin to ask whether the ride was altered. Maintenance logs are requested. Inspection reports are reviewed. Emails and internal communications are pulled. The question shifts from what happened to why safeguards did not stop it. On the ground that night, none of that is visible. What people see is a tower shut down, police tape fluttering, and a growing realization that this was not a random malfunction. Tire's family is notified hours later. The call reaches his mother first. The words do not make sense at first. An amusement ride, a fall, Orlando, her son. Grief does not arrive quietly. It crashes in. By the end of the night, the park empties. Staff are sent home. The ride remains sealed. Investigators continue their work under floodlights. The tower looms in the darkness, unchanged, indifferent. Chapter 1 ends with a single destabilizing truth. A teenager boarded a ride that should never have taken him up. The systems meant to protect him did not intervene. Human judgment failed. Mechanical safeguards did not compensate. The pressure now shifts forward. Because if this ride was allowed to operate outside its limits, then responsibility does not stop at the platform. It moves upward through operators, supervisors, engineers, and corporate decision makers. And somewhere in that chain, a choice was made that cost a child his life. Chapter 2. By morning, the tower is sealed and silent. State investigators arrive early. They do not look at the ride as an attraction. They treat it as a machine that failed under load. Every step is documented. Every component is tagged. The seat tire occupied becomes the center of focus. The medical examiner completes the initial report. Cause of death is blunt force trauma from the fall. There is no ambiguity. The findings confirm what everyone already knows without saying it out loud. Survival was impossible. With that confirmed, attention shifts fully to prevention. The question is no longer what killed Tire. It is what should have stopped the ride from ever moving. The Orlando Freefall was marketed as a controlled experience. Riders are meant to be locked into individual seats by shoulder harnesses that descend and secure against the chest. The system relies on proximity. The closer the harness locks, the safer the rider. Manufacturing documents outline strict limits. Maximum weight, maximum height, maximum chest size. These are not warnings printed for liability. They are engineering requirements. Investigators measure the restraint gap on Tire's seat. The distance between the harness and the seat bottom is wider than permitted. That measurement alone explains how a body could slip free under extreme downward force. But it does not explain why the system allowed it. The ride is designed with sensors that detect restraint position. If a harness does not reach the approved range, the sensor should block the ride from dispatch. That feature is meant to remove human judgment from the final decision. Investigators pull the maintenance records. They do not have to dig far. Technicians had modified the restraint system months before the incident. Sensors were adjusted. Some were loosened. Others were repositioned. The changes allowed restraints to register as secure, even when they were not fully engaged. These modifications were not part of the manufacturer's approved design. The reason becomes clear as investigators read further. Riders had complained that restraints felt too tight. Larger riders could not fit comfortably. The solution chosen was not to restrict access, it was to alter the machine. Emails and work orders show the changes were intentional. They were not temporary fixes. They were not emergency repairs. They were deliberate adjustments made to increase rider capacity. That decision introduces a new level of risk. When safety systems are modified, the margin for error shrinks. When limits are ignored, consequences escalate fast. The machine does exactly what it is told to do, even when what it is told is wrong. Investigators interview ride operators. Training manuals are reviewed. Operators are expected to visually check restraints, confirm engagement, and deny access to riders who do not meet requirements. Several operators acknowledge they knew some riders exceeded limits. They say they relied on the restraint system to compensate. They trusted the green light. That trust was misplaced. The manufacturer had warned against altering sensors. Those warnings appear in documentation. They are explicit. Any modification voids safety assurances. Investigators ask who authorized the changes. Responsibility begins to spread outward. Maintenance staff followed instructions. Supervisors approved work orders. Management signed off on continued operation. Each layer passed risk upward without stopping it. The ride had passed inspections. That fact complicates the picture. State inspections are not continuous. They rely on reported configurations. If a system is altered after inspection, regulators may not know. Investigators now question whether inspectors were misled or whether oversight was insufficient. The focus shifts to corporate decision-making. Operating a ride like the Freefall requires balancing thrill and risk. Height and speed draw crowds. Larger riders mean more tickets sold. Every restriction limits revenue. Documents show pressure to keep the ride running at capacity. Downtime costs money. Turning riders away creates complaints. Modifying restraints solves both problems on paper. In practice, it creates a trap. By allowing riders outside design limits, the ride becomes unpredictable. Forces increase. Restraints behave differently. The system still looks functional until it is tested under extreme conditions. Tyre's ride was that test. Investigators reconstruct the sequence without reenacting the fall. They simulate forces. They model restraint behavior. The conclusion is consistent. Once the drop began, there was no recovery mechanism. The ride did exactly what physics demanded. That leaves one central issue. The failure happened before the ascent. The decision to seat Tyre. The decision to allow a widened restraint. The decision to trust modified sensors. The decision to keep the ride open. Each choice alone increases risk. Together, they guarantee disaster. As findings accumulate, public attention grows. Media coverage intensifies. Questions are asked at press conferences. Officials use careful language. They avoid conclusions. They stress process. Behind the scenes, the evidence is already strong. Investigators prepare reports. Lawyers begin reviewing liability. Corporate representatives issue statements expressing sympathy while denying wrongdoing. The ride remains closed. Fencing goes up around the tower. What once dominated the skyline now looks abandoned. Tyre's family demands answers. They do not want corporate condolences. They want accountability. The state prepares to release its findings. By the end of the second phase of the investigation, one fact stands above the rest. This was not an unforeseeable accident. It was the result of known risks accepted by people in positions of authority. The pressure shifts again, because once negligence is established, consequences move beyond inspections and shutdowns. They move into courtrooms and criminal statutes. And for those responsible, the question is no longer how the ride failed. It is how far responsibility will reach, and who will be forced to answer for a decision that turned a thrill ride into a fatal drop. Chapter 3. The findings land quietly, but the impact is heavy. State regulators release their report after months of review. The language is measured. The conclusions are not. The Orlando Freefall was operated outside manufacturer limits. Safety systems were altered without approval. Oversight failed at multiple levels. The ride never reopens. Within days of the report, crews arrive to dismantle the tower. Sections are removed piece by piece. The skyline changes. What once drew crowds now disappears under cranes and tarps. The removal is permanent. There will be no fixes, no relaunch, no rebrand. For the public, the shutdown feels like closure. For Tyre Sampson's family, it does not. They file civil lawsuits against the ride's operators, owners, and associated companies. The claims focus on negligence, wrongful death, and failure to follow safety standards. The filings are detailed. They cite the modified sensors, the ignored limits, the decisions that allowed the ride to operate despite known risks. Corporate responses follow a familiar pattern. Statements express sorrow, responsibility is deflected. Fault is blurred across contractors, maintenance teams, and regulatory gaps. no one claims direct blame. That changes when criminal charges are filed. State authorities charge individuals connected to the operation and maintenance of the ride. The charges focus on negligent manslaughter and related offenses, depending on role and responsibility. The filings allege that specific actions and omissions directly contributed to Tyre's death. These are not symbolic charges. They carry potential prison time. Court proceedings begin slowly. Motions are filed. Defense teams argue that responsibility was shared. They point to inspections that did not catch the modifications. They argue that no one intended harm. Prosecutors respond with documents, emails, maintenance logs, warnings from the manufacturer. The case is built around knowledge and choice, not intent. At the center is a simple argument. When safety systems are deliberately altered and a death results, intent is not required to establish criminal negligence. The courtroom becomes a place where technical details carry moral weight. Measurements matter. Sensor positions matter. Training manuals matter. Each detail traces back to a decision that could have stopped the chain of events. Tyre's family attends hearings when they can. They sit behind prosecutors. They listen as strangers debate the mechanics of the ride that killed their son. They hear his name spoken in legal terms. No verdict can restore what was lost. As the criminal case moves forward, civil cases progress in parallel. Some defendants seek settlements. Others prepare for trial. Insurance companies enter negotiations. The language shifts from safety to liability. Settlements are reached in stages. Terms are often confidential. What is known is that the financial cost is substantial. That money does not represent justice. It represents acknowledgement. Regulators respond with policy changes. Inspection protocols are reviewed. Rules governing ride modifications are tightened. Reporting requirements increase. States emphasize that any alteration to safety systems requires approval and documentation. These changes arrive too late for Tyre. The industry absorbs the lesson quietly. Ride manufacturers issue reminders, operators review procedures. Some rides close temporarily for inspection. The focus is risk management, not reflection. Public memory fades faster than corporate policy. Yet the case leaves a mark. Families of victims from other incidents cite Tyre's name when pushing for reform. His story becomes a reference point, a warning, a reminder of what happens when thrill overrides restraint. For those charged criminally, the pressure does not fade. Court dates approach, plea negotiations occur behind closed doors, some defendants accept responsibility, others continue to deny fault. Sentencing hearings, when they come, are restrained. Judges speak about duty of care, about preventable harm, about trust placed in professionals. No sentence equals a life. As the final rulings are issued, the case reaches its legal end. Appeals may follow. Some names remain in headlines longer than others. Eventually, the media moves on. The tower is gone. The park continues operating. New attractions open. Music returns to the plaza. But the absence remains. What Tyre Sampson's death exposes is not a single failure. It is a system that allowed convenience to override caution. It is a chain of decisions made by people who assumed the risk would never come due. They were wrong. The lesson is not abstract. Safety systems exist because physics does not forgive optimism. Machines do not adapt to intention. They respond to forces and limits. When those limits are ignored, the outcome is predictable. In the end, accountability arrives unevenly. Some face legal consequences, others avoid them. Corporations absorb costs, policies change, lives continue. One life does not. The final weight of the case rests in that imbalance. A teenager trusted a ride to hold him. The system trusted itself to compensate for shortcuts. Neither trust was justified. The story closes without comfort, because the truth that remains is simple and unresolved. Tyre Sampson did not die because a machine broke. He died because people decided it was acceptable to let it fail.